Are you an assassin? I'm a soldier. You're neither. You're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect the bill.
White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance. This is Tom Metzger. Yeah, right here in north central Indiana, and it's still colder than hell out there, I'll tell you. But we have sunshine. We do have sunshine, but there's none of this snow and ice around here is melting, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Hey, it's January the 10th, 2015, Saturn's Day. Don't forget to get your donations for the show into P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Make sure you always put your email address on the inside of the envelope or on your note or whatever, even on your check you send. So that way I can file everything away and know exactly what's going on. Otherwise, if you just put your name and address on there, that doesn't do me lots of good. Now, when you want to order tapes or videos, DVDs, or anything like that, order that from the webmaster, insurgentresist@yahoo.com, right? Wait a minute. No, it's not that. It's merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. And the webmaster will handle all your orders for tapes and stuff because it doesn't do you too much good to send them to me, and then I got to send them out to the other part of the country. So anyhow, just contact merchandiseresist@yahoo.com and tell what you want, and you'll be taken care of post haste. Like I told you before, whenever anybody put something up on the web with Tom Metzger or White Aryan Resistance, I use this internet to automatically pick it out of the ether and send it to me. It's amazing how many things are attributed to me and statements attributed to me and beliefs that are attributed to me that are totally incorrect. Totally incorrect. One guy wrote, he said, well, that Tom Metzger, that White Aryan Resistance, well, he obviously is on the side of the Arabs and Islamics because he doesn't have any Arab or Islamic cartoons or anti like that. So he jumps to the conclusion, oh, Metzger's riding into it with the those old boys over there, knocked off those people. The only thing I say is the reasons for all this is started by, number one, the problems of religion, period. All the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, all come out of the same bucket. And there would be far less violence in the world, if that's what you're looking for, if they didn't exist. On to something different here. I listen to all sides of every issue all the time. I'm continually roaming the web and the radio waves and television and everything else, listening to what people have to say on all sides. And there must be 50 sides to every issue, you know that. Well, early this morning, I was laying there and I tuned in to the black talk shows. And I want to tell you something. They're funny as hell. But sometimes they come up with some truth that a lot of white people don't come up with. But another show to watch on TV that you'll have, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. And that is Hardcore Pawn. And if you're on the cable or on the satellite, you can almost always get it. Hardcore Pawn. If you want to have a laugh, a belly laugh, like W.C. Fields talked about, tune it in. But anyhow, I'm going to play a few minutes of this the exchanges that went on this morning, and they go on and on and on, but I'm not going to play the whole show. But anyhow, let's listen into Amos and Andy here about the black situation.
When people get killed in the country, it's by the people in the country most of the time, because
what
he's saying, like, Americans don't go over to Russia to kill. Usually, if it's a killing, if an American is killed, it's usually going to be killed by somebody in America, because that's where the person is to kill.
Right, and then within a specific neighborhood, think about a specific neighborhood. When there's certain things going on within a specific neighborhood, if there's a murder in a neighborhood, not so that then, if it's a black neighborhood, it was a black person that did that murder. That's all I'm saying. If it's a Hispanic neighborhood and there's a murder, 9 times out of 10, there's a Hispanic that committed that murder within that Hispanic neighborhood. That's all
I get your point. I was trying to get the point. That's why I asked him. You know, Bjorn is a little more swifter at this issue than I am. But I do get what you're saying. But you know what? What you're describing is not the norm.
But is it not what's going on today?
But the flip side of that is most people where they live don't kill.
Right. Right, but most people don't. I mean, you can look at a situation and in most neighborhoods, most people don't. But I'm just saying, if there is a murder within a black community or within the white community, 9 times out of 10 is someone within that community that committed that murder. Whether that's a black community, whether it's a Hispanic community, Italian community, when the mob was killing.
Can I ask you a question? You're trying to say basically there's so much black on black crime because that's what's in the neighborhoods to kill.
Right. Not to say it like that, but mm-hmm. you kill where you live, man. And when you in situations, poverty situations, man, you kill where you live, no matter in any country.
Ever killed where you live?
No. I've never committed a murder, but I'm just saying in general, there are those in my neighborhood that have committed murder.
Well, let me ask you, does it bother them? Does it haunt them? Do they have a conscience? Is there remorse about it?
Does it hurt them, you know,
is there remorse from these people that you know?
I think that there is remorse. I was incarcerated with a gentleman, and met a gentleman. He was a real nice guy, but he committed a murder, and he was like, the guy was remorseful for, but he felt as if that's what he had to do. But he was like, man, what I'm putting myself through, my family, what I put their family through, yeah, he felt real bad for it. He wished he could go back and redo it. So my point, there is remorse within, with people killing people. But man, you can ask the same question to soldiers that go over to other countries. Are they remorseful? You can ask police officers that's killing here in this country. Are they remorseful? The officer that killed Michael, I think it was Michael Brown, if you tell him got on there, say he'd do it again.
Oh yeah, now that is true. He wouldn't redo anything. That's true. That's kind of scary, Armstrong, that he... And it's interesting he brought that up, because we didn't talk about that. And that's really interesting, that...
Well, did you want him to lie?
I didn't want him to lie.
At least you know where he's staying, right?
Right. Yeah, and don't you feel that he's representative of how most law enforcement officers feel if they can pull the trigger?
I don't think so.
Their attitude, you know what their attitude is, and I've got to let you go. It's better your life, not than mine, because I'm going home to my family.
That's their mentality. That is their mentality. But you gentlemen have a great one.
Thank you
for the dialogue this evening, and have a blessed one, brother.
Thank you for listening. Donna in Oklahoma.
Hi, can you hear me?
Of course we can hear you.
I'm calling to say, there was a guy who called and was talking about people should leave America. I'm a Native American. And as far as any concern, there's a lot of Europeans and a lot of Africans need to leave America. We wasn't having a lot of problems. There wasn't a whole bunch of killing like it was until the Europeans came and they kidnapped the Africans. And as far as You was talking about analyzing who is a savage, who isn't a savage. There's a lot more savagery in America than anywhere else. A little boy, I mean, the guy before me was saying that it's mostly people kill during around their home. Yes, they do. Columbine, Sandy Hook, the movie theater, Target, where the senator got shot. And there's more people in America that's killing. There was another question where somebody was saying, are we better now than, okay, let's go back to Martin Luther King. As far as the education for America, not just blacks, it went down. As far as businesses for the poor, isn't gone down. And if you haven't learned from the first time, it'll continue. So how can it be better other than the fact, to me, the only way it's better, me having another day on this earth makes it better for me.
Well,
but
Donna, listen. Donna, thank you for listening to the show, and thank you for calling. Let's go to Abrams in South Carolina. Hello, Abrams.
How you doing, sir?
Just fine.
I just wanted to make a few comments about certain Muslims in white supremacy or European countries. They get treated like blacks in America. And it's so much hatred for the Muslim community. And it's like they rub it
so,
in your
So
face.
How are, he's listening to the Armstrong Williams show, how are, that's an interesting comment, how are blacks in America treated?
They're treated the worst you can treat a human being.
Is that based on your experience? Because I can't relate to what you're saying.
Well, it's a culture.
No. Is that how you're treated? Is that how you feel?
I feel that way. Yes, I do, sir.
No, okay, then now tell us what makes you feel that way in terms of real things that have happened to you.
Well, it's just the upbringing in a society that doesn't want you to prosper.
So you think that the man can stop you from prospering?
They can absolutely try.
Which man is this that you speak of?
This U.S. government. Since the beginning of...
Well, I see a lot of success stories among people of all walks of life every day. And so your theory doesn't hold water.
But I'm talking about... You're talking about a certain percentage. I'm talking about the masses...
The masses would include most of everybody. So then you're only talking about less than 2% who make it.
Well, that defeats your premise. If you see a lot of success stories, it's only a few.
That's a fact. It doesn't defeat my premise because I think there are very few people reach the level of success that you speak of in this country. That is why less than 1% of the people control all the wealth.
Well, there's no race of people who go through what African Americans go through.
Obviously, you don't know any other people other than American blacks, because you obviously
right
you haven't
now,
talked to them and heard their story.
Right now,
I did speak of Muslims in other countries.
No, I'm talking about in America. You were not talking about other. We're talking about in America. Obviously, you only talk to people that you're comfortable with, because I'm willing to bet you, if you were to talk to other people across the board, you'd be shocked at the similarities.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Bajoran and AW. We're in the last segment of this Friday night show. Mike and PA, that's Providence, Pennsylvania. What's up, brother?
How you doing now, Armstrong?
You know I'm doing. You know that.
Hey, I got two questions.
Okay.
What percentage of white folk are on welfare?
The majority of them.
Wait a minute. What percentage of white people, not total welfare recipients, what percentage of welfare, I mean of whites on welfare. Give me a percentage. 10%? 7%? 12%? Of white people are on welfare.
About 52%.
Okay. What percentage of black folks are on welfare?
About 28%.
Okay. Now, the total population of white people in America is 256 million.
The total population
on I'm a round up from 38 to 40. There's 40 million black people in America. There's roughly the same number, 40 million Latinos. So if you say 50% of white people are on welfare, that means 125 million white people receive welfare.
Well, no. Okay. No. In fact, let me just say this, because I'm messing with you. In fact, in America, there are only about 6% of white people that are on welfare.
Okay, thank you. Now, if it's 6%, okay, 10% of 256 million total number of white people, 10% is 25 million. 13.5 million or 12.5 million would be 5%. So roughly you're saying about 13 or 14 million white people are on welfare. Now, you said 28% of black people are on welfare. Now 10% of 40 million is 4 million. 20% of 40 million is 8 million. 30% of 40 million is 12 million.
Just tell us where you're going.
My point is, there's more white folks on welfare, using welfare, but if we go to the prison industrial complex and look at, if you go into the prison, I would dare say that the white males that are in prison, or white, period, white male and female that are in convicted felons.
Let me stop you.
My thing is, I would say less than 2 or 3% of those whites in prison convicted of murdered outside of their race.
I'm going to help you out, okay? I'm going to help you out. You know, I'm a statistics guy, too, because I majored in economics, but I don't try to bring my statistics into play. So I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you make a better argument than you're trying to make, okay?
Well, you didn't even listen to mine,
just chill. I listened to you. I heard all of your argument, and that is why I'm going to make your... I'm going to make your argument better, so just chill and listen to what I'm saying.
Goodness.
Okay. So here's how you should make your argument. Black people comprise of 22% of the poor, okay? But blacks only take in 14% of government benefits, okay? Conversely, to your point, whites in this country make up 42% of the poor, but they take in a disproportionate 69% of government benefits.
That's where you're going wrong. The way the game is won by the adversary of black folk is that they stay in percentages. Once you get out of the percentages and use actual real numbers, then it's almost like white folk who vote against welfare,
okay,
and they think that
I'm going to help you again before I let you go. But I'm not. You brought it up.
Let me finish.
No. It's not their tactic. There's no such. Although minorities, listen.
You're going to keep bringing up black.
Listen to me. You started this.
Wait a minute. When a white woman gets raped, she gets raped by somebody she knows. And if that's the case,
hold on. I can't even talk to him.
Hold on, wait. How we go from economics
to race.
Because he doesn't like my argument.
We jumping around a lot here.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are. From the birth of babes, there's the truth.
White-on-white crime is has more, if they do it within, I'm staying with the brother two callers ago, where he said you say you do whatever you do in your own community. And that's the same thing. Most rape victims, which is a crime, are based on
that.
Somebody
that's
that
right. Hold on, slow down.
No,
wait.
You're not free on. You
chill,
not
chill
free
out.
On.
He's angry. I'm gonna let him go.
Wait, no.
We got a lot of calls. No, I'm gonna make one last point with him, and the point is, thank you for making my day. Let's move on. Let's go to Kenny in North Carolina. You gotta know when to fold them, Bajorian.
But we did agree with that guy. We did.
Yeah, so, but he doesn't want to hear that. He wants to hear what he wants to hear. You have to understand. You're not going to be able to reason with him. That's why you got to let him go.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Kenny.
That makes sense.
Thank you. In North Carolina.
How you doing, Armstrong?
Now, Kenny is reasonable.
Yeah, I think Kenny will talk some sense.
Talk to us, Kenny.
Armstrong, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Look, that brother called about we do crime in our own neighborhood. He's confused, totally confused. Blacks only make up about 15% of the population. Black-on-black crime is real. Okay, if you take 15% of the black people and 15% of the white people, you put the white people in a trailer park and you put 15% in the ghetto, you can have more black people killing black people. It's simply like that. We make up a smaller percentage of the people in America, so we ought to be getting along better than anybody, but we're killing each other.
Listen,
when a man says that's all he has to say, let's move on to the next caller.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Anthony. And Chris in New York, we are with Army and Bajorian. We're having too much fun here tonight, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Have a good weekend. What I like to get the statistics of is the effects of drugs, just like they had alcohol when they made it illegal, and the Italians, they started killing each other and stuff like that to take over with the Irish. And I don't know the statistics, so this is a question to you. Before, after the civil rights and stuff like that, when drugs hit our community, what was the crime rate of us killing each other then compared to after the civil rights movement, and we were destroyed, like you said, in a way by the government, in a way what they did with us instead of keeping us together as a family, and also throwing in the drugs, what drugs made us do and stuff like that.
That's
but I get opinion on that.
That is a very good point. Let me go back. You know, it's interesting. Before 1968, only 5 out of 20 black families were in poverty. Only 5 out of 20 families were in poverty. Today, 15 out of 20 black families are in poverty since the passage of the civil rights legislation. Okay? And before the passage of the civil rights legislation, out of wedlock births was almost non-existent. The crime on crime was almost non-existent. And drugs was not even something to talk about. So tell me what changed, Chris in New York.
I think changed. One thing I think it changed, which I was kind of disagree with, but it wasn't our intention to do it, is when they separated, when they came in a household, they said the father doesn't have to be there. Because I came from that generation where the father wasn't around. But the thing that killed us, what I say, because we still had a chance to get out of that with all the programs that they had and stuff like that, because I think that was a good generation, is when Reagan took power, you can say what you want to say about stuff like that, and then we had that movie Superfly and all that, teaching the children about how to do drugs and stuff like that. But when the drugs hit, that crack epidemic, I don't think that's really focused on by the media, by even black radio, the devastation. You know, statistics-wise, someone has a number, how it really affected us even up until now. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? Just like the Italians with the alcohol, when they made alcohol illegal, I mean, it affected that whole generation where, your Al Capone and all that stuff like that, they got a whole history even with the movie. But with us, we kind of go from, okay, we're at the stage where we got all these people killing each other, shooting each other, but there's no history from that point up until, you know, the 60s movement you're talking about. So, well, I don't blame it all on the social movement. I blame it on mostly on drugs.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Chris, in New York. Boy, we're about out of time here.
Well, I'm going to play these excerpts like that with no comment. That's hard for me to do. But I think about once a week I'm going to put a clip on here at Black Radio. And it's interesting. A lot of it's funny. Some of it's serious. And some of it is correct. And so, anyhow, that's that. But it does get interesting when they start trying to figure out percentages. Well, surprise, surprise, as if you didn't know this was going to happen. The recent string of deadly terror attacks in Paris have inspired unity and signs of solidarity across the internet, this time supporting of France's Jewish community, the latest target of the Al-Qaeda cell, which has terrorized France in the last 3 days. You don't think that the Mossad might have a little bit something to do with this kind of stuff? Nah. After the massacre of 12 people at the Charlie Hebdo in Paris Wednesday, the hashtag Jesus Charlie, I am Charlie, emerged and grew viral after one of the police officers killed in the attack was revealed to be Muslim Ahmed Maribat. The attack was revealed to be, oh no, the internet took on the tag of Jesus Ahmed. Now, after the double hostage taking Thursday, in which at least 4 people were killed at the hyper catcher of hyper kosher in Porta de Vincennes, the hashtag Jesus Jewif emerged. And I guess that means we love the Jews again. I had to go back and forth and back and forth on this. Thus, this incident follows a tough year for France's Jews who have been repeatedly targeted, especially after Israel's 50-day summer war with Hamas, which led to massive anti-Israel protests in France and a string of anti-Semitic attacks. However, terror attacks targeting Jews are nothing new. Oh no, they're always being attacked. And recent events have revived fears of a return to the dark days of the 80s and 90s, when France was hit by a wave of extremist violence. Oh boy, there you go. Well, that got the Jews back in favor, and I wonder, is that accident? Was it set up that way? I don't know. I don't think it'd be too hard for the Mossad working through two-faced Muslims to bring these young guys along and get them agitated and get them set up and going, just like they do here now and then. Like that kid on Times Square that couldn't get his bomb to go off. Yeah, I'm cynical that way. Every time a story comes out, I look for who benefits, who really benefits from it. And that's right behind follow the money. Follow the money and who benefits. Yeah, it'll pretty well tell you the story in almost every situation. On the other hand, the editor of Britain's storied weekly newspaper, Jewish paper, the Jewish Chronicle, has said that this week's terrorist attacks in Paris will force larger numbers of Jews to leave France. Quote, every single French Jew I know has either left or is actively working out how to leave, said the newspaper's editor, Stephen Pollard. I wonder where all those Jews are going to go. Huh, French Jews? Yeah, I think a lot of them are going to try to come over here to the United States of America. Like it says on the Statue of Liberty, give me your garbage. Yeah, your wretched garbage. Let them in here. Come on, no matter who they are. Pollard added, so it's a fluke that the target, latest target is a kosher grocery, is it? Unquote. In a reference to the kosher supermarket in eastern Paris where four hostages died after it was seized by an Islamic terrorist. Well, that could mean that they were targeting Jewish businesses, or it could mean it was just one of those things. Or it could be that there's so many Jew businesses and Jews in France that every other store may be run by Jews. Looks like the Jew papers are already beginning to back Mike the Dummy Huckabee, that religious fanatic, the one that when he was governor of, was it Arkansas, that he released a black guy from prison, and as soon as he got out, he went out and raped and killed another white woman. Yeah, this is the latest on January 3rd on his very successful Fox TV show. Mike, I Love the Zionist Huckabee, announced he would be ending his six-year run to explore running for the presidency. Oh, boy. No one gives up a Fox gig worth millions of dollars unless he's very serious about higher pursuits. Gee, I guess Mike Huckabee is a multi-multi-millionaire because he loves the baby Jesus. Mike Huckabee would not leave Fox just to be one of the slew of Republican candidates. He seriously feels he can win. And I happen to agree with him. That's what the author, Dr. Joseph Prager, says in the Jewish paper. In 2008, he surprised everyone on a shoestring budget and finished in second place to Senator John McCain. Well, there you go. That's the way he does it with those Christian insanity people. And there are millions of them out there. They want to hear all about the baby Jesus. He won in Iowa right off the bat. And he won the South, of course, the Bible Belt. He was honored with speeches at the 2008 and 2012 National Republican Conventions. He has a recognition factor higher than any Republican potential candidate out there. Well, I'm not going to read any longer because it seems like it's absurd. It's crazy. But it could happen. Boy, they're really pushing this XL pipeline, which is totally insane, not only from the dirty oil that it's going to ship clear across the country and then on ships to foreign ports, not even for the benefit of American citizens, but it's also going to be a terrific target for all kinds of things. And they keep saying they're going to give 50,000, 100,000 people jobs. That's a bold-faced lie. But Obama will fold. I don't think he'll veto it. See what Bernie Sanders says. Hey, he's a Jew. He's a socialist from Vermont. But he makes some good points.
Madam Chair, much of what we do here in Congress is often forgotten pretty quickly. It's hard for members to remember what we did last year, let alone the American public. But I have a feeling that this particular issue, the Keystone Pipeline, is not going to be forgotten. It is not going to be forgotten by our children and our grandchildren. It is, in fact, not going to be forgotten by history. Because I have a feeling that our kids and our grandchildren 20, 30, 40 years ago, 40 years from now, they're going to be asking us, and hopefully we'll all be here, they're going to be asking us, what were you guys thinking about? What were you doing? Did you not hear what the scientific community all over the world was saying? That climate change is, in fact, the most serious environmental crisis facing this planet. That's not Bernie Sanders talking. That is virtually every major scientific organization in this country and throughout the world. And virtually without exception, what they are saying is climate change is real. Climate change is caused by carbon emissions and human activity. Climate change is already causing devastating problems in the United States of America and around the world. I don't have to remind anybody here that just a year or 2 years ago, we voted $60 billion in order to deal with Hurricane Sandy. And what the scientific community tells us, if we don't get our act together and start reversing climate change, we're going to have more extreme weather disturbances. That's what they are telling us. And then I listened to this debate today, and is this debate about, okay, how do we go forward in transforming our energy system, moving away from fossil fuel into energy efficiency and into sustainable energy? Is that the debate that we're hearing today? Is the debate about how we invest more in technology so that we can come up with transportation systems that are more energy efficient? Is that the debate we are hearing today? No, what the debate is that we are hearing today, and where I fear a majority of the members of this committee will vote, is to reject science. And I am very worried about the United States Congress turning its back on science, turning its back on those people who tell us that we have got to cut carbon emissions rather than give a green light for the exploration and the production of some of the dirtiest oil on this planet. I think, frankly, that is crazy. I think we are moving in exactly the wrong direction. I want to thank President Obama for telling us that he will veto this legislation, and I certainly hope that we will have the votes in Congress to sustain that veto. And more importantly, I hope very much that we get our act together, transform our energy system, move to energy efficiency, move to weatherization, move to wind, solar, geothermal, and other sustainable energies. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Well, I agree that there is climate change. I don't think it's for the same reason that most of these people have bought into it, about carbon. I think it has to do with other situations. In fact, I heard a man lecture about it the other night, and I unfortunately didn't get his name. He's written a book about it. He's virtually been excluded from all the meetings on this problem, and he's also talking about the horrible danger of this spraying these aluminum particulates in the air that's creating these aluminum particulate clouds and the danger to breathing this stuff. So no doubt there's climate change, but they're coming at it from the wrong way. That's what I think. And this is what Elizabeth Warren said about it.
Senator Warren.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. And also, congratulations on the new post. I'm very much looking forward to working with you on energy issues and with our ranking member, Cantwell. You know, we've heard a lot about today about some of the problems with the legislative proposal to force the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. My question is simpler. I want to know why the pipeline is the very first number one item on the agenda in this new Congress. Is this about jobs? The number of jobs the pipeline will create is disputed, but most estimates put it at a few thousand or less. What if we focused on highways instead of pipelines? We urgently need to pass a permanent highway bill. The American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials says it would create 8 million jobs over the next 4 years if we could pass a highway bill. We could put people to work in good jobs and fix crumbling roads and bridges. So is the pipeline about lowering America's energy costs? Evidently not. Even its supporters admit that much of the oil in the pipeline would be exported for use outside the United States. So it's not about jobs. It's not about energy. Why is this bill so urgent? The answer is money. Money and power. The pipeline might not do much for the American people, but it is worth a whole lot to the Canadian oil industry. According to an analysis by Politico, since 2009, TransCanada has spent almost $7 million in lobbying expenses related to Keystone. So much money industry-wide is being spent that Burdett Loomis, a political science professor at the University of Kansas, previously described the Keystone XL bill as, quote, a lobbyist support act. And now TransCanada wants what they paid for. Who does this new Republican Congress work for? Foreign oil companies or the American people? Today, their first priority is to advance a pipeline that means a whole lot to an army of well-paid lobbyists and a whole lot to a giant foreign oil company. But we know that this pipeline runs terrible environmental risks, and it just won't do much to help the American people. I didn't come here to do favors for TransCanada. Republican leaders may disagree, but I'll be voting no on this.
Well, on this issue, I surely agree with the two senators or congressmen. It seems like the Republican Party always is the party for profit only. That overrides everything. And war machinery, the military, the war machine. They always get behind it 100%, which makes billions for a few people in the arms industry and tears the shit out of other countries. So if you want to know who the real haters are, it's these people who are making billions off weapons and bombs and tanks and airplanes, and like that latest F-35 is a total failure. It's ridiculous. Well, that's nothing new, because you go back to all the crimes of Lockheed against the American people and the taxpayers. It's enough to really make you puke,
baby.
I see that alleged white man, Mr. Zimmerman, has been arrested again on domestic violence, the one that the liberals and the blacks want to make a white man. You look at his picture on the internet and tell me he's a white man. It seems the definition of a white man has really dropped. Well, they got a nationwide manhunt for somebody who planted a pipe bomb behind the NAACP headquarters out there in Colorado. The FBI released a sketch on Friday of a man possibly linked to a homemade bomb that exploded behind the NAACP offices in central Colorado earlier this week. But investigators would not speculate on a motive for the blast. Well, I would imagine if somebody's going to plant a bomb, you could pretty easily figure out what their motive was. It says he's 20. He's driving a dirty white pickup. That eliminates a hell of a lot of people. Dark-colored bedliner in his truck. Open tailgate, missing and covered plate. Jeez. And the bomb didn't even destroy any property, according to this. Oh, boy. They're going to make this a cause célèbre, man. You dare to scare the black people. It says here a gasoline canister placed next to the explosive failed to detonate, and no one was injured in the blast, which did minimal surface charring to the building that also houses a hair salon. So it put some minimal surface charring. A real sophisticated bomb, man. The bomb was crudely made, Ravenette said, but he declined to provide further details about the device or out of concern that the copycats might compromise an ongoing probe. Don't you remember church of Pastor Butler? Aryan Nations, they blew the hell out of it. Nobody's ever even been questioned that I know about. Certainly no one's ever been charged or been designated as even a person of interest. And that was a church. So it all depends on who's being gored, man. Justice is very selective in this country, always has been. They pretend that equal justice for all, horse shit.
At 10.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us for News 5 at 10. I'm Lisa Lydon.
And I'm Rob Quirk. Right now, the search is on for a man shown in this composite sketch. Take a look, who might be connected with Tuesday's bombing outside the NAACP office in Colorado Springs. He's described as a white man, balding, in his 40s, driving a white pickup truck.
We have been tracking this story for you since Tuesday morning. That's when someone left an explosive device outside the building on El Paso Street and drove off as it went off. And tonight, the FBI and ATF are offering a $10,000 reward for information leading to an arrest in this case.
The FBI, the mayor, local law enforcement went before the media this afternoon for a look at just where this investigation stands.
News 5's Matt Pritchard was at that news conference. And Matt, how much new information did the FBI share?
Well, Lisa, the investigation is still ongoing, and so what they did give out was pretty limited. But we now have a better idea of who we're looking for and why they might have done this.
Intentionally causing something to explode, to me, is a bombing.
The FBI released a new clue today. Try and find whoever left a homemade bomb against a building that houses the Colorado Springs NAACP.
Our primary purpose today is to release a composite sketch of a person who was in the area at the time of the bombing as he carried something down the alley and returned to his truck empty-handed at the time of the explosion.
The man described as a 40-year-old white balding man driving a dirty white pickup with dark liner and covered or missing plates. And although the search is just 3 days old, those in the African-American community say they're happy to see swift action by law enforcement.
They shared what they know, basically. But the most important thing is that they've called us together to let the community know that they're on top of it.
The motive remains a mystery, though, despite many saying it looks like a blatant attack on the NAACP.
I believe that it was targeted, but that's just my own personal opinion based on what's been going on all over the country.
And those heading up the case don't disagree, and they aren't ruling any possibilities out either.
We would be naive if we did not acknowledge the NAACP as a national organization has been the recipient of threats throughout their existence. That said, over the years, we in law enforcement have learned there are many motives for bombings, so we will not speculate.
Regardless of why, the FBI says they're focused on catching the suspect and anybody else who might have been involved.
Rest assured, the agencies up here today will do everything we can to find the person or persons responsible and ensure they are held accountable.
And currently, the FBI is offering a $10,000 reward for anyone that can lead to the suspect's arrest. If you have any information on his whereabouts, you're asked to call the FBI hotline at 303-435-7787. So, guys, we now know a lot more about the situation than we did on Tuesday, but still a lot of unanswered questions about the suspect and also the device that he used.
Speaking of that device, did they give you any idea of what it was made out of?
You know, they really didn't. They said that it was non-sophisticated and sort of just put together at home, but they couldn't give us exact components because of the fact, since oftentimes those that read about it will copycat the materials and make it harder to find the suspect they're actually looking for. So, of course, we're going to be keeping you updated on this and everything that we find out on KOAA.com and, of course, right here on News 5 at 10.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
There's a national news story. It's going all over the world. How about that? A symbol for Heil Hitler and three swastikas are among the items of graffiti on a sign at the roundabout on Southern Cross Roads near Woody's. The number 1488 is common white supremacy inscription. 14 stands for the 14 words, which are, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." I'm glad that they put that in this magazine article. The credo was coined by the late David Lane, an American neo-Nazi and founding member of the far-right white supremacist organization, The Order. The words were inspired by a long passage in Adolf Hitler's memoirs and manifesto, Mein Kampf. 88 stands for Heil Hitler, as H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. Now you watch, there'll be a lot more kids pick up on this and start doing it. The media are funny. The road sign has also been dubbed with the phrase, White Power. The 14 words expressed has appeared in Bray before. Some little town someplace. I don't know where in the hell that's at. Okay. The Polish phrase, Zesternasi, Stow, is an English translation. 14 words were stenciled onto the base of the cross on Bray Head in July 2007. Garda declined Lynch of Bray Garda Station said that while graffiti can be a common occurrence, such material is not unusual, is not usual in the area. Bray municipal district officials said that they were unaware of the racist vandalism. Arrangements are being made to remove this immediately from the sign, said the spokesman for the Bray people. Well, I don't see where, they don't give me any inclination of where Bray is, because maybe they don't want to give an indication because everybody move out of town. The Nazis are coming, the Nazis are coming. Now, this was on a very small sign and very faint and hard to read. I'll send it to you. This stuff seems to strike fear and panic, man. Uh-oh, here's another one. In an unusual, sharp tone, Czech President Miloš Zeman recently criticized a Nazi demonstration in the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. He told Radio F1 that something was wrong, both with the Ukraine and the European Union, which did not condemn it. Well, then they must have financed it. Zeman referred to a YouTube video that showed a demonstration in Kiev's inner city on New Year's Day. Around 2,000 right-wing extremists held a torch-lit procession on the occasion of the 106th birthday of fascist leader Stepan Bandera, the leader of the far-right Svoboda Party. Oleg Taranabok called on the government to officially declare Bandera a national hero of the Ukraine. The Nazi collaborator Bandera is an icon of the far right in the Ukraine. During World War II, he proclaimed an independent Ukrainian state in opposition to the Soviet Union. As leader of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, he organized the ethnic cleansing of Jews, Poles, and Russians on Ukrainian territory. During the January 1st march, the neo-Nazis chanted, "Kill the Jews, Poles, and Communists. Save the nation and the Ukraine for the Ukrainians." Several participants also wore army uniforms. Members of the right sector, a coalition of neo-Nazis and paramilitary militias, took part, along with the Svoboda. A Russian journalist was physically attacked and required medical attention. Wow, there you go. The Nazis are on the march. I wonder who's financing that situation. The Hollywood Nazis over there in the Ukraine. French President François Hollande's decision to invite Marine Le Pen, the leader of the neo-fascist National Front, actually it's pretty much just a conservative Ronald Reagan kind of party, to the Elysee presidential palace to discuss the terrorist attack on Charlie Hebdo marks a turning point in French politics with far-reaching consequences. A party closely associated since its foundation in 72 with the worst crimes of European fascism in the 20th century is being elevated to the status of a legitimate, even indispensable, component of the French political life. Leaving the Elysee yesterday morning, Le Pen said that Hollande had promised to launch a national debate on Islamic fundamentalism. This presages an escalation of the campaign to vilify France's 5 million Muslims. Already on Thursday, Le Pen called for reinstating the death penalty, which France abolished in 1981 in response to the Charlie Hebdo attack. Well, the right-wing Union for the Popular Movement, UMP, is also promoting the FN, pressing for it to join and rally for national unity, called for Sunday by Hollande's Socialist Party and the UMP, UMP. After the UMP, UMP leader and former President Nicolas Sarkozy met with Hollandia on Thursday, the UMP's political committee echoed Le Pen's demands that the FN be allowed to participate. Quote, "It is a unanimous decision. It is unacceptable for the National Front to be excluded from a march for national unity," unquote, declared Laurent Wauquiez, the general secretary of the UMP. Well, there you go. They want the right to march. We want to march. Everybody likes to march. March doesn't change anything. Not a damn thing. But this conservative party, which they keep accusing of the Pens of being neo-Nazis, if they say anything about respecting anybody in World War II, well, that makes them a Nazi. But then when you press them, they say no. They say, oh, no, we're not Nazis. Reminds me of Willis Carto. Has Hitler birthday parties all over California and then says, I'm no Nazi. The FN's founder, Jean-Marie Le Pen, began his political career after World War II by selling the fascist Action Française newspaper and overseeing the torture of Algerian independence fighters as a paratroop lieutenant. Oh, I see where we're coming from. Well, I condemn that kind of action. I believe in Algeria for the Algerians. I always will vote that way on the people who live there, run their own country. And frogs, get out. He relied on a broad cadre of former Nazi and Vichy collaborationists inside the FN, including figures such as Roland Gatour, a convicted collaborationist who served during World War II as the youth leader of the Vichy labor minister Marcel Dietz's National Popular Rally. Le Pen could always rely on financial support from a layer of wealthy patrons, as well as limited support from figures such as President François Mitterrand. The Socialist Party leader Mitterrand, himself a former Vichy official, boosted the FN's media profile in the late 1980s in order to divide the right-wing vote and hold on to power despite his unpopular austerity policies. Wow. Due to Le Pen's apologetics for fascism and mass murder, I don't think I ever heard him say that, including his trivialization of the Holocaust as a detail of history, the ruling elite initially elected not to include the FN in mainstream politics. Instead, it relied on the PS and its pseudo-left satellites, some of which received substantial votes, to suppress strike movements and working-class protests against the war and social austerity. See there? Those conservative right-wingers to suppress strike movements and working class protests against the war and social austerity. Well, that's enough of that for now. Well, there's only one guy that I've heard so far of any notoriety who's hit the nail on the head, and that was Ron Paul Sr. made the statement that it was the two issues that caused the problems in France: mass immigration and warfare and invasion and occupying of other countries. If you don't put both of those things together, you can't know what's going on. If you take one side or the other, you're off the beaten path. Maybe not. Maybe you have to be off the beaten path to get anything done or said.
It's one of the biggest, sometimes scariest moments in a young couple's life, when they meet the parents. But here in rural Brigham City, how much tolerance will there be for a different kind of couple? In 2012, what says family here at J&D's Family Restaurant?
If you're white, you're white. If you're colored, you go with colored people. Colored people.
In this small town, population less than 20,000, there are some big opinions about interracial relationships.
Every time I see it, oh, I want to scream.
And the target of those barbs? This couple. It's breakfast time, and as folks come together, this family is about to get an addition, her new boyfriend.
I'm so excited for you to meet Carlton.
I am excited, too.
But he isn't quite what Dad had in mind.
Wow. Nothing like I expected. You didn't tell me he was black. He was black.
But this man really isn't racist.
What's wrong, Dad?
And these two aren't really a couple.
Hi, I'm Olivia Osler.
They're actors hired by us to portray a very touchy scenario.
All right, everyone, we are rolling.
Our hidden cameras are rolling. And back inside, people are clearly paying attention.
You can't marry a black guy. What's the matter with you?
Dad, stop it.
How did you even get into my daughter's school? A basketball scholarship?
Actually, no.
10 minutes go by, and so far, everyone remains quiet until...
This is just not a chance. Not a chance.
When the dad departs...
I'm really sorry.
It's all right, sweetie. You're okay.
This man... speaks up.
What's that?
Speak up.
I speak up for myself.
I heard him. I did his work.
What do you think I should do?
Let him cool off.
But this next man isn't about to cool off.
How'd you grow up?
How did I grow up?
Yeah, you're a single mom?
As Dad heats up, so does he.
What about the gangs? You have absolutely no idea what you're messing with right now. It's not natural.
Oh, wait, what, hold on here. Watch this.
I don't know a thing about this, Dad, but I've heard you talk to him about that about as long as I'm good at
it. Am I talking to you? I'm sitting with my daughter.
I don't give a damn.
What's your issue? What's the problem?
I'm going to sit here and listen to my greatest stars towards him.
What?
He's another person.
How you doing, sir?
It turns out it's Jason Clark's 40th birthday. But his reaction is really what's worth celebrating.
This is part of a TV show.
Are you me?
No, no, it's not.
It's not something that's common. And I probably grew up a little bit with my view maybe a little bit the other way.
What changed your view?
A lot of experience.
Well, I mean, is that why you're so upset?
We're about to see something that makes our actors almost lose control.
I appreciate this.
Let her talk.
I was on the cliff there for a minute. I was getting emotional.
Inside, you were dying.
I was just really shocked.
I was raised knowing that this stuff would happen, and it's happened before.
And you're about to find out why. Meet these two women.
Hey.
This is Carlton. This is my dad, Jeff.
I'm Carlton, Jeff.
Nice to meet you too. I just don't like what I'm seeing here.
As our actors battle it out, folks can't help but overhear.
Sir, with all due respect, this is a new era.
But whose side are they on? We find out when we tell our couple to leave.
I don't care what you think. No, I don't care.
No sooner are they out the door.
Oh, God.
I am with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think they should stay with them.
And they unleash.
I mean, you see where I'm coming from, right?
I do. Yes, I'm sorry.
This woman is brought to tears.
Seriously, what do? I don't...
It was me. I would have done the same thing.
Really?
And we're not sure why until she says this.
I have a daughter, but she has a friend that's black.
Yeah.
And I told her, I says, he's fine to be a friend. You are never going to get involved again. So I said, no, I'm not. She's a friend. And we're just friends. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I worried about that.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Back in the control room, we're watching it unfold.
See, it made me cry to think a pretty girl like her takes something like that.
Oof.
And he might be a nice young man, but they stay with their own.
Am I wrong? I mean, am I wrong to think this?
No.
Trying to be a good dad.
I was very proud of you for doing that, because that's a shock to anybody.
But not everyone at the table agrees.
All I'm saying is, if they're in love, you have no chance. Okay?
Well, I into this ridiculous situation, which set up these people, but you see how most of the people are cowardly. Most of the whites are cowardly. Just one or two elderly women had the guts to say what needed to be said. So you can, I sent it out to you, the video, you can look it over. And that's it for today. Let's see, what is today? Saturn's Day. Yeah, I get a day off tomorrow. How about that? I can go out and shovel snow and make a snowman for fun. Yeah. 14-5. Especially five words. Yeah, that's right. See you Moonsday. Yeah.